Hey, man.
What's up?
I had an idea I'd like to float real quick, not for this show, obviously, but perhaps a future one. If Paul goes on a tangent for more than like 6 minutes, we start playing like the old dating game theme music underneath. And anyway, in the 40s, when Burma was going... Yes, that's great, Paul. Get back on fucking topic. Whatever that is. Anyway.
Paul says he's away. He was not even on a minute ago, but now it says he's away.
So yeah.
I don't know what to do with him.
Should give him a couple minutes, maybe.
I'm going to add him to the call and see what happens. I'm adding him to the call. He has the Eiffel Tower is his icon. I don't know what that is. That's phallic? I'm not sure what that's supposed
to
mean.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. That might be a Corvette equivalent.
Well, he does not appear to be functioning.
Maybe things are going well with the wife. That's what's it's gentlemen, like, I'm up and ready. Can't really.
It's like a sock on the door handle. Is that what you're saying? If I put the Eiffel Tower as my icon on Skype,
the modern equivalent, exactly.
I noticed that Sam is,
how you guys
Sam
been?
Is staying very quiet through this entire exchange.
Yeah, I'm on my phone. I'm sending. So I'm going to send something to you guys, but I have to email it to myself first.
Well, that sounds proficient.
Yeah.
I know, right? There's got to be a better way to do this.
This is the show right now, by the way. This is all going to be on the show.
We're doing such a great job about staying on task and being efficient, by the way. Yeah.
We just started, man. We got 2 minutes and 20 seconds in. Okay, fine. Bigfoot. There, okay? Now we're on subject.
Yeah. I like the idea of trying to do an hour show. I think that's the perhaps part of the future of the Bigfoot show.
It's a personal challenge.
It is, because I think the problem with a lot of podcasts, they just run on a little bit. They just like if we just keep.
You just described the show.
Are enough people who like that, but I don't. I think. I mean, if I was a listener. Are we that entertaining?
No, I don't think so. I know people who listen to our show to fall asleep.
Wow.
And they tell me that. Like, oh, yeah, I listen to your show when I fall asleep. I'm like, oh, great.
Thank you.
Paul. Okay, well, I think we should
start.
Sam, you're still typing?
No, I'm on my phone. I'm just listening quietly.
Okay, so I forgot. I'm supposed to say this is November 23rd. 2014. Mm-hmm. This is episode number 63063. For those of you scoring at home, you want to mark the 0, the 6, and the 3 on your card.
Mm.
Episode 62 was released about an hour and a half ago.
That's the is that the one where you actually interview a Sasquatch down in Oklahoma?
Yeah, huh? Yeah.
How'd that go?
Good. You know, they've got a very heavy accent down there, so it's always sometimes hard to follow along with the. It's like they have their own dialect almost.
I know.
Yeah.
Dude, I have to say, before we begin, I mean, because I've been woefully, out of the loop working on my new AT film, which will be available at squatchfilms.com. But the whole thing with the Standings film and Meldrum's involvement and, oh my goodness, I had no idea until just 15 minutes ago. I mean, I really hope we give that some ample time.
And yeah, I watched the Kickstarter video like right before you guys called.
Yeah. Pretty wow. Sam, I wept.
Sam?
Yes.
We're trying to stay on topic.
I take it you got my Facebook message.
Wow.
Is that really Burt Reynolds' ass, do you think?
Apparently you can purchase this book on Amazon for about $68 used. So I had somebody else send it to me, so I felt like I had to share it.
So what he sent us is a book, Hotline, The Letters I Get and Write by Burt Reynolds. And on the front, he's wearing apparently only – he's got a girl clinging to him.
And she's got terrible aim.
She does. She doesn't seem to – maybe she just can't reach. And then on the back, he's wearing a football jersey, and that's it.
Yeah. And this had to be right around the Cosmopolitan spread he did.
Can't imagine he ever thought that was a good look for him, but whatever. What do I know?
Yeah.
Well, let's go into it. I had a couple of topics I wanted to touch on today, and obviously the best part of the Todd Standing Kickstarter is that he wants $900,000.
I think that's to handle all his legal fees when he gets his ass sued.
I mean, seriously, Scott, you –
Yeah.
You've done the exact same thing. And I remember correctly, you usually ask for a slightly smaller amount than $900,000.
Yeah, usually my films. Well, first, let's be clear. When you say I do the exactly the same thing as standing, I don't partake in hoaxing or trying to dupe people. Other than in trying to convince them I might be amusing.
Yeah, I was going to say, you sure do. You tell them it's entertaining.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, I've made my films. I usually ask about, you know, $4.5-5 grand. That, and Todd needs $900,000. Which can get a lot of good psychiatric help and perhaps, entrance into a Liars Anonymous club.
Yeah, so the best part, and I think we need to jump over to that. I'm, as usual, not prepared.
Oh, that's okay.
I tried to be prepared. Let's go to no, I don't want to watch the video. Stop with the video. A documentary project by Tom Stan. I want to see the Kickstarter page.
Yeah.
How come the link doesn't go to Kickstarter anymore? Oh, there we go. Okay. So he says in the description, so this is Bigfoot North. He says, is the first feature film documentary with real live interaction between Sasquatch, wilderness experts, and PhDs. Now, there have been
masters of arts interactions before, but never PhDs.
And sometimes with a Sasquatch and just the PhDs. But this is the first time that we've had the Sasquatch, the wilderness experts, who
right.
I assume he's talking about Jeff Stroud, Les Stroud there. And then PhDs, and those would be... Jeff Meldrum, at least. So what he says in the thing, where is he? Where did he say? Well, he was in the woods for 10 days with John Bindernagel. Mm-hmm. And then...
Bindernagel.
Where does the thing about he's talking about Meldrum? You guys see that?
hold on. Right near... Okay, here we go. After three incredible days in the field with the man responsible for the success of these Bigfoot TV shows, Todd Standing, Idaho State University professor Dr. Jeff Meldrum witnesses Todd and his team interacting with a Sasquatch just minutes before witnessing the creature for himself. This entire event is showcased in Bigfoot North. Now, as you posted a response that Meldrum put up on, I guess, on his page, and in essence, Meldrum somewhat denies that. He says it could have been a Sasquatch. He said he saw an upright being through, heat imagery thing. So Standing is misrepresenting, apparently, what Meldrum said. But yeah, that said...
I'll read Meldrum's response. The account offered... I should read it like Meldrum. No, I can't. The account offered on Todd Standing's Kickstarter site is accurate insofar as my involvement is concerned. Following the events that occurred last fall in Alberta, Todd asked me not to discuss my experience extensively until he had a chance to finish the project of his documentary. Therefore, I have said very little publicly and open about it. I will let him share the details with those attending the summit, which was this weekend, or the airing of his film in Seattle the following Tuesday, which I guess is next Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. I will say that I did witness an interaction, i.e. Sonia... talking reassuredly to something large and heavy that was circling our camp under cover of darkness at the end of a bermed road.
Yeah.
I reacted to her approach, and eventually it reacted to her approach and eventually broke from the tree line and crossed the gravel road to the opposite tree line. I observed through night vision an upright silhouetted figure moving, forward leaning, arm swinging, moving smoothly. Was it a Sasquatch? I am not certain, but under the circumstances and based on the reconstruction conducted the next day, it strikes me as a real possibility that it was.
Now, this is so interesting. I think finally we have something truly interesting to talk about because, I mean, my first instinct says this is just pure horseshit. The gullibility gene has kicked in again with Meldrum. He seemed to be getting away from buying, and now it seems to be full force because he's dealing with the guy where the evidence is so strong, his track record is comparable, if not identical in quality, to someone like Biscardi, where it's just obvious bullshit he's throwing out there. Maybe he...
Standing you're talking about here.
Yes, Todd Standing, exactly. But my question, I just want to say this real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is the fact that what's interesting is what I do believe when Jeff says he saw something. So... and this gets back to my educated guess here is that Standing probably conned Meldrum. This would be my if I was on the probability, he had a guy out there in a suit, and lo and behold, right when Jeff shows up there, they're seeing some. But if a guy was in a suit, would he be able to get a heat reading off of it? And because Meldrum says he saw some kind of heat reading. So that makes it a little interesting too.
I thought he said he saw it through night vision.
Which means that what? That it wouldn't have to have?
Yeah, he said he saw it through night vision. So he just would have seen the figure. He didn't see it through thermal. He saw it through... Yeah, he says.
Gotcha.
He
says. Okay, so it could be a guy in a suit.
It could have been a guy in a suit. It could have been a guy in a ghillie suit. It doesn't have to be like a monkey suit.
Yeah, then it's definitely horseshit.
But of course, I mean, the thing is, and I totally know where you're coming from because this is the man who has put forth little fuzzy monkey puppet faces in trees and has said that they're Bigfoot, and also has shown video of Bigfoot blinking that if you superimpose his own face over it is an exact match. So there's really nothing in his history that would lead us to believe that he had an authentic encounter with with a Sasquatch. That said, even a blind pig, you got the blind pig sayings down there, Sam. What is the saying about the blind pig or finding a mushroom or something?
Blind pig finds a mushroom.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut.
There you go.
That's our version of it.
So maybe this is that situation. I mean, I don't have any reason to doubt that Meldrum is. I mean, I think he's not going to tell a lie. I don't believe that Meldrum is a liar at all. I think you're right that I think in the past he's shown some issues with credulity.
Yes.
If he actually thinks he saw a Bigfoot when he was out in the woods with Standing, this helps explain a little bit why he was being so buddy-buddy with him recently, right? I mean, now kind of that connects a dot. And whether or not he should feel that way or whether or not he actually did see a Bigfoot is sort of beside the point. If he thinks he did, and Meldrum is the one, I'm sorry, and Standing is the one that took him to the spot where it was, that helps explain some things about why Meldrum was being his bud.
Okay, let's say that's true. And that's actually a fairly good theory, I think. But you figure by this point in time, wouldn't have Meldrum seen some of those puppety images that Standing has put out before? And if Meldrum looks at those
thinks totally.
That's what's goofy. I mean, it's just – I think not only is it gullibility with Meldrum at times, I actually think what – partly fuels that, and here's some of my amateur psych speculation, whoever asked for this today on the list, is he really, and this is where I think all of us agree with this, that this is a topic worthy of scientific investigation, and we're on the same page, or I feel I'm on the same page with Meldrum there in a generalized sense. But when you start getting into specifics and he wants to be part of this discovery, it overrides his critical thinking apparatus every once in a while. And I think this is in all likelihood one of those instances. Like nothing's been going on for a while. You know, he's got all this press and, oh, I need something. And then that kind of, ooh, well, you know. And so his reason kind of maybe pushes the very questionable history of Standing to the side, and the ambition works out. So I think it's, you know what I mean? Ambition plus gullibility leads to thinking that he, you know, maybe had. And I hope I'm not being too cynical about this, but I think Todd Standing deserves cynicism.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. You know, so. I agree that whether or not, and I'm willing to reserve judgment on whether or not Meldrum saw a woody ape, if he saw a Sasquatch, because it's entirely possible.
And we weren't there. I mean,
right. And so when the movie comes out, I presume I'll probably end up having to look at it at some point, and you know, we'll find out if the video is in there, and we'll see what it is. My you know, this is sort of a Charlie Brown moment with the football in that, you know, she's holding it there. She's got it there. It's completely kickable, and I want to kick it, right? So I'm okay, fine. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to run up to that damn ball again. And I just can't help but believe that yet again she's going to pull it away, and this will end up being nothing. And I want to give Meldrum the benefit of the doubt here, but I completely agree with you that just being in the woods with that man, there's a question as to why anyone would want to do that. I don't believe that. Again, this is the guy who Matt Moneymaker thinks is kind of nuts.
Yeah,
you know, so.
It actually kind of there's a little bit of desperation in there too, which is kind of sad to me. It seems like, remember hearing about this initial, you know, contact or working together, and then also Stroud. You know, Stroud. Is
oh, that
also,
was That was the best part. You sort of glossed over there. He said it in the Kickstarter thing. He basically says the whole reason why that TV show was any good. Yeah, the man responsible for the success of these Bigfoot TV shows (parentheses Todd Standing) (unparentheses). Like, I mean, he basically like throws Stroud under the bus too. Yeah. So I'm sure there's some really interesting stories that Stroud could relate to us. Sam, do you have something you want to add to this before I move on?
Or are you still on the phone?
Oh, see, he found it. He found a nut.
Sam, is his narcolepsy kicking up again?
Oh, damn it. I'm sure he's still there.
No, I'm here. I'm here. Just waiting for my shot. To me,
I gave it to you.
Yeah, man.
To me, the most interesting thing is that when you look at somebody like Meldrum, he is as steeped in the Bigfoot game as anybody else is ever going to be.
Yeah.
And when he said he had to have at some point looked at someone and said, yeah, this Todd Standing guy has approached me about doing some work with him. I can't imagine that of all the people he knows and all the people he's involved with and connected with, someone didn't take the time to say, dude, you need to look at these pictures before you go any further, or you need to look at some of the other claims that this guy has made, or some of the times where he's obviously been caught out in hoaxing. You need to look at all of this.
Right.
Yeah. And so I'm very dubious of the fact that he was not presented with all this beforehand. Somebody had to have brought this to his attention. So for him to pass all of that and go forward with his work with Standing,
it's
fascinating, because you're talking about one of the most revered people in the field, and he literally blew past a roadblock of warning signs and indicators that this guy was nothing but a charlatan, and proceeded to work with him. And so he's either got an amazingly huge heart, or he's one of those people who has to be completely convinced by himself and no one else. I don't know. It just, if you had shown all of that to me and then asked me if I was going to work with the guy, I would have said, hell no.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's another factor you got as a possibility. And again, you know, I've met Jeff a couple times, and he is basically a very nice guy, and he has a raw intelligence, and he's a really good writer. But that doesn't, you know, exclude what seems to, I would think, to a sober, objective observer, some really gullible moments in his past. And the other thing is this, not just that possibility of he loves the notoriety, so he's staying in the game however way he feels he can. But, you know, I think you have to consider, and I'm not saying this is the case, but that, you know, the money angle too. Hey, wait, $900,000 thing? Ooh, you know, we don't know what's being talked about behind, you know, as far as what deals are going on. I mean, it's something that is a possibility as well. And I'm not saying that to cast aspersion. I'm just saying it's usually not brought up. And, you know, anybody can be susceptible to that, and who knows?
Well, three things. First off, the 900,000 goal is really achievable, I think. I want to point out that's 900,000 Canadian, which I think is like 650 U.S. dollars. No,
right.
That's real money, because, you know, it's almost one to one. It's somewhere close to that.
Yeah.
The two things I want to say with regard to this, and then if there's nothing else, we can move on. I think I'll be very curious to see the conditions in which this encounter supposedly happened. If Meldrum went into the woods, into Standing's area, to the place that Standing wanted him to go with Standing's people, and then lo and behold, there was an encounter with something, then that's going to have some red flags all over it. If he basically put himself in the hand of Standing, who then took him to where the Bigfoot were, and this is the extent of the encounter, then I think that, well, I'm going to want to see that footage, because I'm just not convinced that's – I mean, it would be different if he was just out with him, just the two of them, in a completely strange place, and then they had some kind of encounter. But if this is an area that is basically, you know, of Standing's choosing, then that's going to be a problem. And the last thing with Meldrum is – I don't want to hold him to a standard that is unfair, but I think that he's gone to great lengths over the years to put himself out there as the Bigfoot professor, you know, yeah. as the truly serious academic in a field that is desperate for that sort of thing. And so he's going to be held to a higher standard. And if it turns out that he's been played for the dupe by someone like Standing,
then yet again,
then
I
that's going to reflect poorly on anyone who's serious in this field. Because now, you know, the Bigfoot professor, the one guy with the PhD who sort of put himself out there and painted a red, big red target on himself, just got harpooned. If it's the case that this Standing thing is a total crock. So I just think that he's got to be extra special careful about what he does because of the position that he's put himself in.
I was just going to say, you know, it'd be interesting if we could get on the show is actually like a legal expert on this, because it would seem to me that if in fact Standing, let's just say if this scenario is true, that Standing had somebody out there in a suit, wanted Meldrum to believe it, and Meldrum had a reasonable reason to believe it, let's say. That, you know, that, how is that not fraud, especially if there is some type of monetary or reputation to Meldrum? I guess the other argument would be like, well, if you're dumb enough to believe that a guy who has a history of obviously defrauding people or hoaxing them and you believed it, then yeah. You got no one to blame yourself. But I wonder if there is, you know, not only with Standing, but someone like Biscardi. I mean, if there's money being changed hands and it's proven that you were saying this is the Rick Dyer, exactly.
I mean, I think the defense that they have is like, are you serious? This guy thought I was going to show him a Bigfoot, you know, and then that would be about it. And
depends on the judge, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I just think that it's like I paid a guy $5,000 to take me to where Santa Claus lives, and when I got there, he wasn't there, and now I want my $5,000 back. Well, you're not going to get $5,000 back because you were going to look for Santa Claus. You know, and if there's any kids listening, I know exactly where he lives. Yes. So I'm not saying
in Todd Standing's garage.
All right. I don't know where Paul is. He's still not online. Yeah. So we're just going to keep going. I feel bad. It's really late where he is. I don't know that.
You know, can I just add one last thing?
I wish you would.
I know we're going for brevity, but in thinking back about what I said, this is personally very difficult for me because and I'm sure there are other people out there who feel this way. You know, when I first got actively involved in this subject, Jeff Meldrum was one of the first people to show me a great kindness. I contacted him about the Elkins Creek cast, and he personally took the time to photocopy his report that he had done and mail it to me. And I was starstruck. I was like, wow, you know, this is the yeah. Jeff Meldrum taking the time to correspond with nobody me.
Right.
When he could have just, you know, done nothing, not responded or just blown me off.
That's
or whatever.
What I do. I don't.
Yeah, exactly. and over, you know, I bought Legend Meets Science. I watched the documentary. And so, you know, as I've grown up in this field, he has always been a preeminent part of it. And as I have grown in this field, though, it's almost like a child that grows into adulthood. I've seen a lot of the bloom come off of that rose. There was the Snowwalker footage. You know, there's his endorsement of some other dubious pieces.
Paul Freeman's cast. That's a big one.
And so it really saddens me. And I do hope that for a strictly completely personal, you know, regard that somehow he extracts himself from this, because honestly, it's disappointing to see somebody who, like you said, Brian, he has purposefully elevated himself to be the professor of Bigfoot, throw his lot in with somebody who's just absolutely reprehensible like Standing is. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Way to make us look like assholes, Sam.
I'm here for
Let's
you.
Let's go to a clip.
I'm here for you.
All right. Now, the next topic.
Oh, God. We're not going into Melbourne right now, are we?
Dude. I've only got basically two topics to cover.
Let's just have to repeat everything.
Before we do, I'm going to read a comment from a listener. Guy Usher on Facebook said, "I used to like you guys. I look forward to reading what you had to say and look forward to your podcast, but not anymore. All you guys do anymore is bitch about the same crap over and over. It's getting old." You know what, Guy? I completely agree with you, but what else are we supposed to talk about?
Exactly.
I mean, standing is a viable topic. Melba Ketchum remains a viable topic. I completely understand. I think your complaint, Guy, is with the world of Bigfoot.
Indeed.
And the fact that we are a mirror of that.
Maybe we need to get more into like fashion design questions about Melba. So, you know, new aspects of Melba instead of just pointing out the painfully obvious craziness of her.
Well, let's get to that painfully obvious. She posted on Facebook back on November 16th, I believe, a picture. Now, this thing, I've heard this before, that the Bigfoot braid the horse's hairs, right? The manes of the horses. I've heard this before. I have never really had a position on the braiding of horse manes by Bigfoot. It seems like a weird thing for a Bigfoot to do. It seems like a weird thing for a horse to stand there and let happen to it.
Yeah.
But it's been out there, right? Well, she posted a photo, which, by the way, copyright 2014, Dr. Melba Ketchum, all rights reserved, it says at the bottom.
Oh.
Unlike her website, though, everything down there is spelled correctly. The photo, she shows a picture of a horse with braided manes in Texas. And they appear to be knotted more than braided, but there's some sort of like, you know, hairball situation going on the horse mane. Yeah. She has pictures of a similar thing from Michigan. And then she has some from Great Britain. And I wish Paul was here to talk about this. But clearly her position is that that means that there's Bigfoot in the UK.
Yeah. And further confirmation, she is out of her fucking mind. And therefore, for the hell. See, I guess there's a dip. Why am I? It's interesting. Why? I just feel like I know you have this thing about Mel. I think you might be in love with her, actually. That's
me?
What's there. No. I mean, you really, she really irritate her behavior. And it irritates me, but not to the degree it irritates you. I mean, you love to go off. I mean, you do it on the page. And
well,
then
she's
it irritates.
Easy. She's easy.
I know.
Easy
she.
Meat,
but that's
man.
What I'm saying. She. So why? Nobody. First of all, anybody who believes her, you're. Or myself or Sam's reasoning is probably not going to make a dent in those people because they're not that we're particularly bright, but I think it's fair to say people would probably not be particularly well-versed in anything remotely scientific. They just, it doesn't work. They just, wow, I love her hairstyle and her makeup. And therefore she must be telling the truth. You know, it's just, I don't know. And I almost feel like that by talking about her and if by chance, particular nut jobs are listening to our show, which of course most of our audience is not.
Most
that it's giving her free publicity. So it's like she seems to be one of those. If you just ignore her, she's going to go. It's so crazy that it'll go away. Whereas someone like Standing, he's a little slyer. So it's going to.
I don't really know that there's any difference between him. I don't know that. There's a great deal of difference. They're both begging for money on social media. Melba's begging for a lot less, but she's still begging for money, incessantly begging for money, so she can do DNA tests of her alien baby skulls that she found somewhere.
At least Standing stays within the realm of like traditional Bigfoot.
Sam, I mean, what do you know about horse mane braids?
See, I grew up hearing a completely different version of this. I mean, where I grew up, it was witches. Witches braided horses' manes while they rode them at night. And I'm sure if you go to different parts of the world, there are different sources for the legend. To me, Bigfoot is a pretty new player in the game of
horse braiding,
yeah, for lack of a better term. So I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how Bigfoot got drug into this in the first place. I was completely comfortable with the idea that witches would steal horses at night and ride them through the countryside while they were stealing children and braiding the horses' manes. I was okay with that. I don't need, some 8-foot tall wood ape doing it.
And again, like Brian said, why? What would be the motivation? I mean, boredom. You know, well, a vocational skill training, perhaps for future work.
A reasonable person would look at this. She says she sees this pattern worldwide. A reasonable person would look at this and say, well, it must be something other than Bigfoot, because I don't believe that they're in the UK. Like, I'm sure this is a bit of hyperbole, but the UK, it's a little tiny place, right? And it doesn't have extensive forests. Right. It has some forests, but a lot of them have grown back, and it just doesn't have – anyway.
And not a strong history, like, at all. Of hair covered upright beings. I mean, it's just there are some, but when you look at the history, how long England's been around, how long people have been there, it's severely paltry compared to, let's say, the Pacific Northwest and the US, which has thousands and thousands of reports. So it's just, you know, it's just something that someone who is batshit crazy will latch onto, because it's something unique that I can pretend to the world and people will think I'm cool.
I remember the witch thing too. I saw it on a TV show once where there were some horses in a barn. It was like one of these reality shows, and now I can't remember what it was. I shouldn't have brought it up, but okay, fine. We don't have to talk about her anymore.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I bet, you know, my guess would be it's just something that, you know, like when the horses run, the wind patterns interlock the hairs together, and they get, you know, just like people's hair.
It's long hair, right?
It's long hair. Wow, what a mystery.
It's going to get matted up.
Are you that bored with your life that you have to speculate? Or it's the third sign of the apocalypse, the impending idiocracy. Take your pick. We'll be right back.
And actually, those are the only topics I had for that.
Good night, everybody.
That's it.
No, well, we didn't talk about her begging for money for the alien skulls, but based on what Scott says, nobody wants to hear it. So we
don't
know.
I don't know.
I
am proud that you're not getting all heated, though. I am proud. I mean, we've done a couple shows where, man, I was thinking you guys perhaps had dated at one time, and you were just getting back.
No idea what you're talking about.
Well, if you do want to hear about it, just follow her on Twitter, because that's literally all she posts.
Oh, I don't follow her on Twitter.
If you follow her on Twitter, that's all it is. I don't see her posting anything else. And she'll even she gives you up to date.
Just the alien DNA head thing?
Yeah, just the alien DNA. And she posted some teaser pictures. Oh, look at this sample. Don't you want this tested for just $5? You can help. You know,
if everybody gave me a dollar, we'd be done.
She's the Sally Struthers of Bigfoot now.
She's awful. She's just awful. You want to do listener questions?
Yeah. Sure. We have listeners?
We have listeners. We threw this out there to our listening friends, and a whole lot of them replied. It's like, man, we just did a show. What it seems like anyway, it was in July. Sam, why don't you you start us out? Because you got one already.
As I go to our page.
Part A, B, and
yeah,
C.
there was like a three-part question that was really good. Let me pull it up here. From Richard Curtis. Question the first. Why is it that many people seem to bestow mystical powers on Bigfoot? Why is Bigfoot more likely to be interdimensional or have special powers of telepathy, invisibility, say, than a dog, tiger, squirrel? Makes no sense. It absolutely makes no sense. But I think... Well, and to answer, it kind of plays into the second question too. The constant Bigfoot is super intelligent, hence that's why it can't be found. Where's the proof of super intelligence? I think we as a species have an innate tendency to apply supernatural or spiritual powers to things that we don't understand. And the more that we don't understand them, or the more more alien they are to us, the more likely we are to do that. And so I think that that's where part of that comes from. And then part of it, too, I think, is it's just a complete cop-out. People don't want to have to answer the hard questions, or they don't want to have to really, face some of the problems with this field that we have, such as lack of a body. And then also, too, I think it allows anyone who wants to claim a sighting or experience to do so. Because then they have the fallback of, oh, well, I don't have any evidence to give you because the super intelligent, invisible big feet just disappear whenever I pull out a camera, or they read my mind and know that I'm trying to record them. And so the only way that I can experience them is if I go out in the field completely buck naked with just a peanut butter jelly sandwich and nothing else. Which currently
I do that all the time, but not for
yeah. Bitcoin. I think, you know, the third one, I really think that's a leading the leading one right now. I think there's a real scramble of people out there who are trying to get attention for themselves and for their claims. And in order to do that, they have to create this mystical Bigfoot in order to explain the fact that they live in the suburbs, but they have Bigfoot, you know, visiting their house every day. Mm-hmm. And I've said it before on the show, I think the reason that people like that are so anti-kill or so anti-specimen is because they know that when a wood ape is actually put on a slab somewhere in a laboratory, all of those claims that they have made are suddenly going to go away. And because you're going to have this creature that isn't telepathic, that can't turn invisible, that isn't super intelligent, and all along they've been saying it is. I think those people will disappear just like their claims.
But I mean, and just I'm anti-kill, but I totally don't think there's anything what you would call paranormal.
Well, no, I'm not saying
Sam just said if you are, you think they're paranormal. So
yeah, hey, listen, Glarkon just told me via my teleportation antenna I just got a few days ago. Can I just add one thing? I agree 99% what Sam just said. I think another reason is because you have this, as I kind of alluded to with Meldrum's belief being similar, I think, to all three of us and a lot of people into this, reasonably intelligent people who think, you know, all these been all these sightings and through history, and there's probably something to this, is as time goes on and we have. And I think there is a tendency within a lot of people to think, well, maybe there is something, another explanation to this. It's, you know, whether it's, and again, one that I think the evidence is weak for, meaning like, you know, you hear like, well, these are actually, you know, pets of aliens or Chewbacca type creatures they bring down. And if you're truly a scientist, you can't absolutely rule that out. But at the same time, you got to go that, you know, what is the actual evidence you have for that? You have a few people who've claimed they've witnessed these events like that going into a spaceship, but the vast majority of the sightings are very just simple. Large creature, upright, moving gracefully, blah, blah, blah.
You know, so, I think some of this well, first of all, people who think they're telepathic, because some people think crazy shit. I mean, there's nothing else you can do. And they think they can get crazy shit about all kinds of subjects, let alone, you know, this one. So that one, I just think you got some crazy people in there that are going to mix everything up no matter what happens. But based on my own personal experience, I think that a lot of people go in the woods and they're not aware of how animals can be in the woods. They're not familiar with how animals are really good at being stealthy. Mm. These animals in particular seem to be pretty good at it, above average for sure. And I think they see things that to them just do not appear to be possible. So they start to ascribe. You know, I said that about the thing that I saw. In Area X, had I had any reason to believe they were paranormal, what I saw would not have disabused me of that, because they moved with such smoothness and with no sound. You know, the episode that I released earlier today, there was another encounter that is related on that episode by Shannon Graham, who's in the group, and she saw this thing move, and again it was very, very smooth. It was like on a rail, and it made no noise whatsoever. And sometimes that's what you see. And then if you see this thing that's really, really big, moving really, really fast, really like effortlessly, smoothly, with no noise whatsoever, it has to be a ghost or something, right? I mean, that's the only explanation you can come up with. And you can't imagine that what you just saw was just an animal that's really good at doing all these things.
Yeah.
So I think part of it is just people aren't familiar with how animals can be.
Right. It's an important thing too, when people use the word telepathic, it's like, what do you mean by telepathic? I mean, it's like, if you're going to, oh, Sasquatch is a telepathic. So if I'm sitting there and I'm thinking of the Ace of Spades and it can read, you know, that's in my opinion.
And you hear from the woods, Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades. I'm going, holy shit, they are telepathic. That, whether in the human realm or animal realm, I think is probably horseshit. But if you use the word telepathic as far as being in tune to what you where you're at, let's say emotionally or how, you know, animal, we do that with each other all the time, human to human, animal to human. Mm-hmm. And if you're in their room of this world, they're gonna be, like you alluded to, Brian, they're gonna be very stealthy, know how to use that environment much better than we do.
Way better.
And they could be picking up on stuff that we're not even aware of, just, you know, our behavior, and maybe that informs where they get stealthy, all that stuff. So there could be that. And also you get into the whole realm of mesmerization, things like that, that we know tigers do. Mm. Tigers use mesmerize eye to eye. You go eye to eye. You can, in a sense, lock something on. That's not telepathic in a crazy way, but it's still some kind of mind locking thing going on that aids in freezing the potential.
Here's an example. I was in X earlier this summer, early on in the summer.
And I actually don't mean ecstasy as in the drug.
No, correct? I mean Area X. Gotcha. And I was there with a guy in the group, and there were these squirrels chattering in the trees, running around doing squirrel stuff. And we saw, I don't know how we got on the subject, because, you know, you're just sitting, you're talking a lot out in the woods, and there's no TV or anything to distract you. And so, hey, somebody said something about, like, eating squirrel. Like, have you ever eaten a squirrel? Or they used to hunt squirrel when they were boys. That must be what it was. And I said I'd never eaten squirrel before. And he's like, oh, I'll get you a squirrel. Like, and we'll cook this squirrel up, and we'll have some squirrel. So, you know, these squirrels have been around us all afternoon long. I think it was Blake, and if he's hearing this, he'll have to tell me if it was him or not. And he goes to his truck and like gets a .22, and then the squirrels are gone. Like, there is not a squirrel to be seen. He's walking around looking. I mean, because they were everywhere, right? Because the forest is full of them. And all of a sudden, he has his .22, and they completely evaporate. Now, if I was of a certain, you know, gullibility, I might say that the squirrels were telepathic and knew that he was there to shoot them. Or maybe they just got tired and took a nap. I don't know what happens with squirrels and why they come out and why they don't. But that's an example of, like, I know for a fact these were not telepathic squirrels. At least I'm pretty sure they weren't telepathic
squirrels.
What
about, and not a telepathic thing, but maybe that type of knowledge could have been in the sense of.
Yeah, I don't know.
Seeing this object, like, you know, Herbie was taken out by one of those. And who knows if that could have been communicated through other squirrels. I mean, that's possible.
As far as I know, there's not a lot of squirrel hunting going on down there. But I don't know. But it's just but let's just say that was the case.
By humans.
Let's just say that was the case, that the squirrels knew what that meant. That still doesn't mean that they're super intelligent or telepathic. It just means that they're, you know, animals with brains.
It could have been Pavlovian. Well, we've seen, wait a minute, I saw one of those things before, and when it came out, two of my buddies died. I leave. Or, like you said, it could have been another time of day. Just moving around. The fact that he's moving around could have scared him all.
And the super intelligence thing, I think that just goes to, I've seen this again and again, and that people who are enthusiastic about Bigfoot underestimate completely both animal intelligence, just on the first level, and then secondly, how smart other primates are, especially the higher primates like orangutans and gorillas and chimps. Ridiculously smart animals that can do really incredible things. So super intelligent? No, they're not super intelligent. They're not like, you know, Stephen Hawking kind of intelligent. But they're way smarter than the average bear, right? And they can be, you know, pretty stealthy and tricky out there. So I don't know. I think the super intelligence thing is just based on having really, really low expectations of how smart they are to begin with.
And if you couple that with, you know, I think it's a fair comparison to say that if Sasquatches exist, they are a higher primate. And what do we know about higher primates relative to other species in virtually all ecosystems? Right. There's a very small number of them relative to, like, say, squirrels and stuff. Again, whatever that principle is that Kranz talks about in his book, the bigger a particular animal is, the less there are of them in any particular ecosystem. So if they're smart to begin with, less of them.
That's why they're
stealthy, you know.
That's why there's so few elephants in Area X as well, because they're really, really big. So there's so fewer of them. His last point, he wants – I'm sorry, Sam, did you want to say something?
I was just going to say, if you want to see some just amazing insight into the intelligence of animals, there is a free there's a free documentary you can find on YouTube. It's called A Murder of Crows. I actually watched it the other day. It is absolutely fascinating. And these are birds.
Crows are crazy smart.
Yeah.
And it was shot by an orangutan. Things like, that's what's weird.
I walked away from this video, and this time of year, we have a lot of crows here in our little part of the world. And there just happened to be a bunch of them out in the pasture. And I was thinking about the part where they talk about how they could recognize and remember individuals. Like, they would know your face. Right. So if you ever did them wrong, they would remember you. And I'm looking at these crows out in my pasture just thinking, I hope I never, like, chunked a rock at you guys, or I have to go get the mail. But yeah, don't underestimate the intelligence of nature.
Yeah, they were showing crows on Nova recently, probably like 6 months ago, and they were showing experiments with, you know, they put the little grub or something in the water, and it's floating on the water, but the crow can't reach. And the crow figured out that if he threw stones in there, like, so the crow was understanding, you know, basic elements of physics and displacement and things like that, but knew he couldn't do that if the grub was in the same tube but on a little pile of sand instead of being in water, because the rocks wouldn't make the sand go up. I mean, so crows are ridiculously smart animals.
And how big is their brain? Super small.
Peanut.
So
it
doesn't, brain size isn't necessarily a sign of, the bigger the brain doesn't necessarily mean smarter, and the smaller the brain doesn't mean.
Richard's last question is, why do so many shows give witnesses the benefit of the doubt always? So many times I've listened to encounters and you just tell the liars and attention seekers from the genuine witnesses, yet they are never truly questioned with a skeptical mind. Too many bullshitters given too easy a ride. I think you answered your own question.
Yeah.
Why do so many shows give witnesses the benefit of the doubt? Because they're making a TV show and they really don't give a shit if the guy is telling the truth or not. It's not the point. The point is, you know, really awesome TV.
Well, I think it harkens back to the other guy who was saying that all we do is bitch and complain about what's going on. You kind of have two choices. You can either look very, just open-eyed at the field and what's going on within it, or you can just say, you know what, we're here for entertainment purposes only. We want people to listen to our show. We want to get people on our show, because we've talked about this in the past. The reason we don't have guest hosts is because we're assholes.
nobody is volunteering to be on
nobody
our
wants
show.
To be on the Bigfoot show.
Nobody's ever said, hey, can I be on your show?
Yeah.
I don't believe that's true.
I mean, you kind of have to make that choice as a person who does these shows or partakes in them. Am I going to let these people just come on and do whatever they want, or am I going to hold them to task? You know, right. If you come in here claiming that, you know, Sasquatch is braiding your horse's manes, I'm going to call you on it. I'm going to need to see something. But if I do that, then suddenly a lot of people don't want to be on this show. So if your show is driven by stories and your show is driven by witnesses, you kind of have to make a tough choice.
Yep. Yeah, and I think you can be, and I think we've largely demonstrated that being informative, critical thinking, and entertainment are not mutually exclusive ideas. I think we do a pretty good job of that. But it's just trying to be truthful and not you know, listening to stories. Most stories we hear about, look, we just talked about the Todd Standing thing, and we all pretty much said, at the very end, it could be true. You have to keep that. Right. If you're going to be truly scientific, you have to. But again, does it warrant further investigation? Like, would you take the time to go out in Todd Standing's area of the woods to look? Based on his previous experiences, what he's presented to the world, not a chance. Just not even close. And there's no way I'm going to pay to see that movie. But let's say, Brian, you happen to pay for it. And then you go, you know what? That was kind of interesting. I might then do it. I'm going to have to hear from other people, but I'm not – it's – you know. You guys know what I'm saying.
I know.
I'm cheap is what I'm saying.
Okay. Yes, you are. That's been firmly established. I don't know if it's on the show or not, but it's firmly established.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was a guy – I just saw his question that I wanted to read it. Darn it. Dan Williams says, as each year goes by, my belief in the existence of Bigfoot goes down a little, like a health bar in a video game. It's almost game over for me. Do any of you guys have this problem? No, I don't.
Not now. There was a time, but not now.
Yeah.
You know, it'll fluctuate a little bit, but just a little bit. It's still firmly in the yes. I would be, and again, it's one of those things, how would it ever be disproven? Which is kind of a, you know, I mean, both of us, let's say we all live to 80 and there's still no carcasses come forth, right? As yeah, like a zombie Sasquatch. I'm coming forth from the
Zombie Bigfoot.
It's hard to imagine.
That's a video game I want to play right there. Zombie Bigfoot.
Zombie Bigfoot. But I think what it would be, it would just make it more, you know, it probably would make me more open to more esoteric explanations, perhaps. You know, like if there were really detailed, you know, let's say something like you guys are doing Area X and it got even more detailed and you had more people in these areas and still nothing. Not that it would make me leap to that they can, you know, become invisible and stuff like that. But it would almost force me perhaps to look and what is it? Maybe they were there. Now they're gone. Now, you know, that type of thing. It would make it more mysterious, but it's hard to imagine not still having that basic belief that they, based on what happened to me. And again, still the volume of reports that have come out of the Pacific Northwest since the 1800s.
And that's the problem with Dan's question, at least for me, is my own personal experience. I would bifurcate his question. I would say that there's two things. He's talking about his belief in the existence of Bigfoot going down, and I can't have that go down because at this point, I believe that I've had experience sufficient to establish in my mind that these animals are 100% real. So there's no way in my mind it can go down. It's inconceivable to me because of the experience that I've had in my life. Now, if we're talking about just the quote-unquote study of the animal, the interest in the animal, the animal's place in popular culture, I could have drifted away from that a long time ago and left it in my rearview mirror quite happily. So if your interaction, quote-unquote, with the world of Bigfoot is what you see on Facebook or on TV or whatever, and you have half a brain cell, you're going to be disappointed, right? You're going to ultimately find yourself just nodding, shaking your head in disgust and walking away. And that is the reasonable thing to do. But if your interaction, you know, quote unquote, with Bigfoot is that you go into the woods and do that, even if you don't actually necessarily have a sighting or something like that, I think that's an entirely different ball of wax. And so for me, no, my little video game health bar doesn't go down. But again, I feel like I've moved past that question in my head.
Ooh, I just thought of something. I wanted to bring up. Can I bring up real quick?
Did you want to say anything about this?
No, I'm pretty much in the same boat as Brian. There was a time when I was really starting to kind of see my health bar go down too. And then I was fortunate enough to have some experiences that pretty much put me in that position of answering the question.
Right.
You know, it wasn't an issue anymore of belief or of, you know, hoping or whatever that was keeping me in the game. I mean, I had some pretty rock solid experiences that put me to the point to where, you know, even if I didn't stay involved in it at all, I don't think my belief would go away.
Right.
You'd have to come up with something pretty strongly do away with that. But
you'd have to somehow conclusively prove. Stop.
What the hell is that?
That was you.
Sorry.
No,
it's my phone. Yeah.
Oh.
Is it Sam again?
Have always said though that, you know, the experiences that I've had, if someone came out at some point and said, okay, this was me and I fooled you and this is how I fooled you, I wouldn't refuse to accept that. I would need even more concrete evidence than what I was presented at the time, but I'm not shutting that door. That said, my overall interest in the subject has waned considerably. I'm removed from it in large part. I don't follow all of the chatter and the politics and the intrigue that goes on online with all the Facebook groups and the forums and all that. I've put all that well in my rearview mirror. So in one regard, no, my interest will never go away because of my experiences, but my interest in the subject as a media and as a social engine, it's waned considerably.
Right. And I would say, and before we move on to whatever you want to talk about, Scott,
it's fascinating.
What's
it? So hurry up.
I'm sure it is. We'll get to it. We have time. There was a time when, and I feel bad for guys like Dan And there was a time in my interest in this subject prior to me having my own personal, you know, confirmation. And I completely agree with you, Sam. If somehow what I experienced was could be shown to me to be sort of like the you know, the creepy guy in the rubber mask at the end of Scooby-Doo, then, you know, I'm not unreasonable. I would accept that, but I can't conceive of how that's possible. And I don't even want to get into all of the reasons for that, but I just don't think that's going to happen. So I'm not too worried about it, but yeah, I totally agree.
You're open to it.
But the, what I find interesting about myself is that as I have become more and more certain regarding the existence of this animal, I become less and less interested of trying to prove it to anyone like Dan. And I'm not picking on Dan, but, you know, I used to really want to like argue it, right? I wanted to like lay out the reasons and say this is why I think it's, you know, a real thing and blah, 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 and have those discussions. And, you know, hell, I started a whole damn website about doing exactly that, right? And had 20,000 posts or some obscene thing like that on it. But now it's like I really couldn't care less. And I'm not saying that to pick on Dan or anyone else. I'm just saying, like, some say, oh, you know, I really have a hard time believing this anymore. It's like, all right, I don't care. And I could tell you like 56,000 things. And I guess I kind of do because I make a podcast about it and I put out stuff like, you know,
you
three
do?
Hours
What's
ago.
It called?
I know. It's called The Bigfoot Show.
Cool.
But I just don't have the same kind of passion for it that I used to. And I think it's interesting how those two things are sort of the inverse of one another. The less certain I was, the more I wanted to debate it. Now, the more certain I am, the less I want to debate it. I don't know.
You're getting old and crusty and hardened.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Well, and it also harkens back to what we talked about earlier. There really hasn't been, I mean, we've largely, last few years, been into this stuff. But what has there been really new? Really, really new that we can, you know, we know that Standing comes back, a great Standing, Biscardi comes out, blah, 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 blah. Sykes thing was kind of exciting,
oh, yeah.
Inconclusive thing, all that stuff. So I think any topic, when you're into it and it kind of reaches a saturation point, will get to a degree boring. You're just not as enthused about it. That's you know, relationships are that way too. You know, you're just kind of like, okay, well, whatever. So if you stay committed to it, in some way. I mean, I think we're all still basically interested in, but I would agree with what Sam said. I'm not on every day like I used to, like what's going on. And another reason for that is because it has become so popular. So it has become harder to separate potential wheat from the chaff. It's just like, oh God, here's another, you know, another show coming up, blah, blah. You know?
The other thing that occurs to me as we're talking about this is the three of us are becoming increasingly less qualified to host a show like the one that we're on.
Yes. If anybody else would like to pick up the slack,
maybe we need to pass the baton on to someone else.
But can I? And I was going to say what is exciting to me.
Yes.
In the research.
Is this your topic?
This is something, and I think, I bet you've speculated on this. I'm very happy to see that you've purchased a drone, think that's cool. And you're into that. I think a really cool. About a month ago, I was thinking about this because we know this technology exists now, but it's, again, it would be the amount of money and the dedication to it. But we know that there are tiny drones, right? There are drones the size of bees that can actually fly around, be programmed to fly in a specific sector, fly around, get some heat signatures, getting some video. Now, let's say one day when costs would go down, not us, because I don't know if we'll ever have that money, but I think it would be a great thing. If you had a zone, let's say a 50-square-mile zone, strong history of sightings, perhaps a couple of recent, which you could consider credible, you grid out the entire area. And again, this is something could be...
This is old-school Bigfoot Show stuff right here. We haven't had one of these conversations.
Yeah, I like, dude.
The grid out the 50-mile with the B-size drone.
The B-size drone. And, dude, it's going to happen. You, within 20 years, you're going to have... People will be able to have access, or a group, small group, perhaps us, who knows... You have like 1,000 of these bee-like drones, and you grid it out and you send them out. And it would almost conclusively, if there was a large upright primate within that zone, because these things would be programmed by that point and sophisticated enough to dodge branches, move around them, go or do all that. And however long it would take, let's say a 24, 48-hour period, and it thoroughly looks at all those grid points, and then they return to where they've been programmed to come back to. I'm excited about that, and I think that's something that is in the future of Bigfoot research.
Well, that's Meldrum's Falcon project right there.
No, no, the Falcon is stupid.
With bees.
No, this is in the forest. I can't see anything. Oh, there's leaves in the trees?
Here's what I would say. There are very small drones you could buy today on Amazon. They're nothing like what you just described, but they are small. They fly for about, 6 minutes because their batteries are so small. They don't have the ability to do anything interesting. They can't be programmed or anything like that. That being said, are those things under development by guys that have unlimited budgets and the need to spend them? Probably.
Military, yes.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you've got some serious – you've got some real technical limitations there with regard to – it's all about battery, actually, and power source.
Yeah.
But you know, what's interesting to me about drones right now is that – the state of the art is moving so quickly for the consumer.
Yes.
And the prices, while, electronic quote unquote toy, they're pretty high, but the prices are really unbelievably low considering what you're getting. Right now, DJI, which is the company that makes the drone I use, I have a DJI Phantom Vision 2 Plus or whatever the hell it's called. They just came out with a new drone, and this thing has one of the really awesome features that it has is it has a downward looking camera and sonar so that it can actually lock on to physical objects and remain stationary based on its position relative to them. This is what cruise missiles do, right? I mean, this is crazy technology that can be in the hands of people. So while I think that the specific scenario that you put forth is pretty far out there, I think that the idea behind it, that consumers, regular people would have the ability to put into place technology, what I think it would look like is probably a fixed-wing drone, because those things can stay up for a lot longer, I think, and they can fly patterns. They can't hover, but, they fly like a plane. I think it's entirely possible that you could throw up a bunch of those. They could run routes. They could have thermal cameras. Software could tell you if they see anything on thermal. All this stuff is technically doable.
We just need a $900,000 Kickstarter.
You need a $900,000 Kickstarter, and maybe in 10 years that'll be a
$900,000
Kickstarter, right? So, I think it's possible. I think that this improvement in technology is really going to make some difference. But we probably would have said the same thing 15 years ago about game cams, right? And digital cameras and things like that, and they didn't really prove out to be anything at all. But I am excited about it.
Yeah, I think the key here is not the hovering above that. They've got to be in the forest. Therefore, it's the size of the drones have to be tiny. It has to be because we both know this, Sam. We all know this. Those who've been in these woods, it's thick as shit. It has to be able to just maneuver through that. And let's say this theoretical scenario, you had 1,000 of these things. You'd also have to weigh in that probably 4 of them might be eaten. Actually, they'd be flitting around like a bee or whatever, and a friggin' blue jay is going to eat one or whatever. But you could probably retrieve it because you'd have the signal for it. It's got to be in the forest. It's got to be going amongst and gritting out, knowing via GPS it's going to thoroughly. An analogy is like those things that were in Minority Report. Remember when they sent the little things out, the little robots, and they go up? Obviously, in the future. But I actually think it's closer than one would think. Like people, that's 50 years down the line. I think it's more like 15 to 20 years. That if not consumers, at least if you had a dedicated group of private individuals with enough funding, and I don't think it would be that exorbitant, you could have a number of those things and do a pretty cool search and scan through an area and be really reasonably sure that at that point in time when you went through, let's say, that 25 mile square area, that there was not or was an upright primate.
So at what point are the chimpanzees glued to the tigers?
That's the initial testing. They go in to hopefully elicit laughter from the Sasquatch.
Do you recall an earlier episode where we were going to airdrop chimpanzees?
Glued
epoxied to tigers, right?
Yeah.
I don't remember why. I don't remember what the tiger chimp union was going
to. And they had like GoPros on. Maybe that was pre-GoPro. But just the shot,
a hand cranked, camera because GoPros were too expensive. So we were going to get a bunch of tigers.
I don't know if I still think it's kind of an interesting, but I think I don't know. I don't know if I'd go for it now, but because it is, I think there is some cruelty to it unless
I think of boxing a chimp to a tiger.
No, I don't mean
that. A lot of cruelty.
Just letting a chimp if you let a chimp, like, I wonder what an average primatologist would say if you had a chimp, or what, you let a couple of chimps.
Oh yeah, no, this is like old. This is like old school night here on the Bigfoot show, because we talked about putting like cages of primates out in the woods, and
but look how we got excited. See, it's kind of Sam was, I think, actually woke up for 2 minutes.
Yeah,
like unmuted my mic long enough to laugh.
What?
He had color in his cheeks there for a minute. Yep. It was great.
Anyway, that's all I want to say. That's something about the future, the potential future of Sasquatch research that I'm excited about, that possibility. And I think the potential for it is closer.
Maybe we should do a podcast about drones. It's called the Inspire 1, by the way, this new DJI drone. It is unbelievable. I am so, so in love with it. I want one so bad. It's like $3,000, though. It's kind of expensive. Yeah. So that's like more than my first car cost.
Hour six. I think we wrap it.
No, we're good. It's an hour six.
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, there's one. One other one to talk about. Yeah.
Hold on, let me see if the Broncos are still playing. Sorry, that was horrible. Go ahead. Go. I'm just
Mike Kowchak says, I hope I pronounce your name correctly, Mike Kowchak. I don't know what I'm saying. What about the government cover up that the other podcast is constantly talking about? You guys have never mentioned anything like that, to my knowledge, and they make it sound like commonplace for most sightings. Yeah, I think the idea that there's a government cover up on the subject of Bigfoot is not
cornball,
not real,
not founded.
No, I think that's crazy shit. I don't believe in large scale, conspiracies. I just don't think humans are good at keeping that kind of stuff in. And so, the idea that like government, to the extent that I've heard them talk about on that show, I just don't think that's possible. I think that's crazy.
If a Republican led committee comes to the conclusion that there was no conspiracy with Benghazi, then what are the odds? I don't know if that makes any sense, but it's just the government cover. I mean, I can see a scenario where you had someone, and I love when everybody talks the government. So it's this, machine.
It's the black helicopter thing. Yeah.
What the government is? It's people. It's right. We the people. That's individual. So I could see a guy, maybe a military, some couple of military dudes, right? And they're into Bigfoot. They're part of the government, and they have access to some equipment, or maybe they did. Let's say they found a carcass of a Sasquatch or something. And they didn't, for whatever reason, want to give it to the public. I could see that, but that's a different scenario than the government. There's no thing really. I mean, the government is purely an abstract thing.
No, the government is a group of people, many of them underpaid and underappreciated.
Yeah,
that's what the government is.
Only takes one disgruntled worker to completely ruin a conspiracy.
So I know that there's stories about I've read the stories about the firefighters in the forest who found the burned up Bigfoot, and that's complete bullshit. I think I've heard the stories about the military, finding one on the military reservation. I think that's probably bullshit. They're fun to talk about. Maybe they make a really good episode of the X-Files, but like who gives a crap about it? I mean,
unless you've got some kind of harder evidence, or if you talk directly to someone, not a second hand, but a first person, supposed witness who you find credible, then I'd be interested. And I don't doubt that could have happened, but, or maybe not even in a government scenario, just somebody out, let's say a hunter guy. And he's like, these poor things, I don't want these things. And they just buried it, or they didn't talk about it. I think that's definitely possible.
Well, I think it's possible that somebody shot one by accident over the years and just left it there or buried it or whatever. Totally right. But that the highest reaches of government, it's a common knowledge that Bigfoot exists and they're doing all they can to cover it up. I don't believe that's true. Yeah, I don't believe that's true. All right. Well, this has been a downer of an episode.
No, it hasn't. We got excited, or maybe just me.
About drones, we got excited about. You got excited about your science fiction stories again. There was no, we were just, this entire show was just bitching about Bigfoot. That could be the show title. I'm so glad we came up with one there at the end.
Bitching about Bigfoot. That's good. People will, they'll go, I want to hear that because.
All right. That's going to get lots of downloads.
Son of a bitch.
Is there really nothing else?
Yeah. Is that all there is?
If Paul had been here, maybe this is it, because Paul's not here. We didn't have an hour 20 of you know,
tangents.
The filler.
Yeah. I feel like we should each go on a tangent before the show's over with. But,
no, please. No. Oh, God.
There's something really interesting about the history of the soup can you guys have not thought about before.
Oh,
this is the tangent.
Don't care.
No.
Go ahead
no.
and say don't care.
Yeah. Listen, we got to I'd like to play a couple of games of online Scrabble before yeah. Cowboys
All right.
and Giants kick off.
For those asking about Donald, he's still doing well.
Oh, did somebody ask about Donald?
Yeah.
He got brought up a couple of times.
Oh.
The highlight with Donald is we had one of our Halloween decorations. It was a skull and these like bone hands, and it looks like it's coming up out of the ground. And fire ants built a nest inside Ooh. The skull. It actually ended up looking really cool before it was all said and done with.
So that's theirs,
but
then, right?
yeah, but because of the fire ants, we couldn't pack it back up after Halloween was over. So we took it and we hung it on the fence row. Just to wait for the frost to kill off the ants. And in the interim, the donkey found the skull, and that's now like his play toy as he comes around. And
cool.
There's like wires connecting it all, so he grabs the skull and like swings it around by the wire. It's pretty entertaining. So,
do you think
it'd be a little bit macabre if you saw it from the road, but you know, whatever.
Do you think has his mane ever been braided by a Bigfoot, do you think?
No, well, you know, donkeys have very bristly manes.
Oh, right.
And when they're
Sasquatches
upset.
Sasquatches use conditioner on it first.
Yeah, they have to condition the shit out of it first. But no, they their manes are not like horses. So,
Well, you're missing a research opportunity right there, I think.
I know, right?
All right.
Get a chimp on a tiger on the back of a donkey.
There you go.
Then that is episode 63. All wrapped up right there.